history of this law, but we have
Love
a very long
radio.
And recently, after 1996 and the proposition was passed, we have a county board of supervisors who have been fighting this issue. They've taken it all the way to the Supreme Court. They try to sue the state for the ID cards that have been issued. That's why we only recently had them here in San Diego. But in 2003, the San Diego City Council did adopt an ordinance. They created the 24 plant within the city limit. They created a citywide ID card program that actually never went into effect. They also addressed a few other things like cultivation and stuff like that, but they never addressed dispensaries. They've never addressed how do you acquire as a patient. And what's going on now is they're trying to do that. And that originally, we set up a previous medical marijuana tax. There was another one. But 2 years ago or so, the city set up a second medical marijuana tax for to specifically address the issues of access and dispensaries in light of some recent federal changes and the fact that Obama has started to, with the new administration, they've laid off of wasting as much federal resources on the subject, supposedly. That's why we've had much more windows open up for this issue. So in the city of San Diego, what we had is the task force weigh in. Those are folks that were nominated by each city council person, and they came up with a recommendation of what the ordinance should look like. They said that it should be all commercial, all industrial zones. These are the restrictions that we recommend. Here's the processes that we recommend. And that was not 100% what we wanted. But it was a compromise. It was something that it was, by the way, they were asking for a 2 and a 3 process permit and some other things, but it was a compromise. It was a compromise because there were members of the task force, patients, collective operators, there was all sorts of folks on this on this committee. I'm not sure if I'm seeing any members of the task force here tonight with us, but last night at the meeting, there were several there, and they're very active, and they don't like what's happening now either, because their recommendations, what they came up with, were not. They were listened to by the city council. They heard them. They heard them out. They asked them some questions, but they disregarded all of the recommendations, completely disregarded them, and they created this situation where in 6 weeks, we're going to end up with a ordinance that only allows for 5 specific zones to exist in the city of San Diego where collectives could be located. Maybe 1, 2, maybe 5, 6 places will open up in a year after everybody closes. So that's what we're facing, and that is something that affects every single person in this room, and there is initiatives out there for legalization of cannabis in 2012. There's initiatives out there for local, like somebody was passing around where's the gentleman with the initiative back there? There you go. The Citizens for Safe Access. So there's a lot of things going on in the community right now, people trying to do, and all those things are wonderful efforts, but how can we prevent the access that we have today, how can we prevent the access that we have today from disappearing? How can we prevent every single place from closing, maybe not 6 weeks, but however long it takes for the city attorney to actually execute those insist letters that they've sent out to most of us, most of the facilities in town? Well, Ben's going to tell you about how we're going to do it. We talked about it at the meeting a little bit, but we have an idea. Not only do we have an idea, but we have a way that we are convinced is going to change every single one of those council members' minds. We have a way that we are going to activate every single person in those specific districts because people are pissed off. When we've been out there talking to them for just a little bit and asking, hey, how do you feel about competitive markets? We tell them, hey, everybody's going to close. No way, that's not going to happen. Absolutely not. Are you kidding? There's like 4 dispensaries right here on my street. They've been here for 2 years. Everything's fine. No. People don't know. People don't realize that this is what we're facing. So what I'm asking for tonight is a commitment from you. Every single one of you, sign up for some of the things that Ben's going to bring up tonight and commit to actually devoting your time and effort to helping us stop this ban because it is possible, but it isn't possible without every single one of your involvement and input. So before we pass it off back to Ben, does anybody have any questions about the background, this initiative, or any other issue that you'd like to ask? Kathy?
The next sentence after what you just said, you're out in the field, and they say, no way, there's these 4. What does that look like? How is the city going to come and close them down?
Well, they've issued cease and desist. I'm not an attorney, by the way, so I'm really an attorney. But I understand. The city has issued cease and desist letters to most of them, and what hasn't happened yet is the charges haven't been filed, misdemeanor zoning violations or the fines that they're threatened in the cease and desist letters. No legal action has actually been taken aside from that first step of notification. I believe, and the attorneys that I've talked to have suggested that, or have concluded that, right now there's not really much legal standing before there is an ordinance. Because there's no moratorium, there's no ban in the city of San Diego, there's not much legal standing for the city attorney to really actually act on all those cease and desist. Not only that, but there's also... Right, not only that, but there's also no resources. You know, the city is broke, so there's a lot of facilities in San Diego, so that's why it's taken them forever for 2 years or whatever, however long they've been on it, to send these letters out. But as soon as this ordinance comes into effect, the attorneys that we've talked to suggest that they will have some legal standing, at least try. They'll begin to know. Maybe it won't happen overnight, but it's something that's going to happen. It's going to happen quickly. We don't know how fast, but you can just imagine, I think.
So once it taps, if it taps that way, that's what might be the moment to get them to then take that.
Okay. I think that within a couple of weeks after ordinance passes, we'll see one or two people or facilities that have received a cease and desist, probably charges filed. I don't know. I certainly hope not, but that would be my prediction as a layman, I guess. I saw a question over there. Yes, earlier. No? No question? Yeah? Excellent question. That's something that we've had a lot of confusion about. That affects the unincorporated areas in the county of San Diego. We've got 18 municipalities. This whole area, the county of San Diego, has 18 municipalities. That includes the city of San Diego, but other places like La Mesa, San Diego, and other cities that are incorporated out on city council have to enact their own ordinances. Some of them have bans on the books. Some of them have moratoriums on the books, like Oceanside. That's why our chapter of ASA has expanded and tried to expand into those areas and activate members and patients in those areas through our North County meetings, our South Bay meetings, and now our upcoming East County meetings to try to get those places or people in those areas going to their city council people and telling them to overturn those bans and overturn those moratoriums. So that $11,000 thing applies to the first municipality out of 18 that did something, that enacted some sort of an ordinance, and that would be County Board of Supervisors affecting just the unincorporated, non-cities parts of the county of San Diego. And they created like an $11,000 fee and a regulatory process you go through the sheriff. Right now, not a single place has been able to come into compliance with it in the 7 months that ordinance has existed. So as far as we're concerned, there's a ban in the county. It's not a right ban. Limits to be grown either indoors or in an enclosed enclosed greenhouse is outdoors with a lock on it. And unfortunately, technically, or fortunately or unfortunately, those limits are invalid. They've been invalidated by a case called People versus Kelly. That's been a recent decision in the appellate courts that's come out and said that that portion of the law that set limits and gave counties the ability to implement limits or reduce or whatever was an unconstitutional change to the original Prop 215 that we all voted in, because Prop 215 never said you had to stick to a certain limit of plants. And so we're back to whatever is reasonable for your condition. And that's a debate that is being fought right now in the legal, in the courts and everywhere else, as what an amount that is reasonable for a condition is or isn't. And that's what patients are having to prove in court right now today. Not whether, you know, 24 plants are not reasonable, but what they're reasonable for, you know, their condition. So what we recommend is the county card, that thing we fought all the way to the Supreme Court to get, that the county unfortunately still screwed us on and gave us the most expensive one in the state, $166 a year. Nonetheless, it gives you the only thing that gives you immunity from arrest. That's the only thing that gives you that limited immunity from arrest, that where the cop cannot actually take you in if you're under, it's in the city, those 24 plants, in the county, the 6 and 12 originally allowed. But it's a voluntary program. You don't have to get the card. But with just a paper recommendation, you're always technically at the discretion of the officer whether or not they're going to believe that that's a legitimate recommendation. So get the county card. That's critical. It's expensive. It sucks. But if you're Medicare or Medi-Cal, I think it provides you 50% off. But that is the only thing that gives you immunity. So, I mean, you got to get that card if you are a patient. We recommend it highly. And we're also actively fighting to reduce money. The department doesn't see nearly as many people a day as supposedly intended. It's a huge room, a bunch of employees that see like two people a day. So, you know, it's, and that's why we're paying $100. Any other questions before we get into the meat of the campaign? Denied safe access in the city of San Diego. That is not what the voters intended. It is not what the Medical Marijuana Task Force recommended and urged the city to do just a few, you know, months ago. And it's not what the city is doing. That's just, it's not going in line with what the community needs. So get active, especially in this period of time, if there ever was a time. And bring a friend out, especially if you're here, to help us out with a letter, envelope, or fill out do many other tasks that we'll talk about tonight. So, Ben, let's start with you.
All right. So, thank you, Eugene. That was a great kind of way to bring us up to speed on where we are as far as our lobbying efforts and what's happened in the past. How Canvas for a Cause and myself and everyone else who's working to organize this campaign through Canvas for a Cause came to this was we were all the planning commission meeting that where the planning commission recommended this ordinance to the city council. Was anybody from here at that planning commission meeting? Okay, so a solid amount of you. So you guys all saw that our side, the side arguing safe access, had at least 2-1, if not 3-1, over the opposition, the prohibitionists, to argue just bluntly, said that they hardly even supported this ordinance because they want an outright ban that just says nothing, explicitly says no medical cannabis facility. And we as an organization, felt we were uniquely positioned to get involved in this cause and to help bring the ball down the field for safe access. And to tell you a little bit about the background of Canvas for Causes organization and why we felt that we were uniquely sort of situated to get involved and do that, I want to bring up the executive director of Canvas for a Cause, a great organizer and activist, Trace Watson, to tell you a little bit about the history of the organization.
All right, guys. Well, first of all, I'm really, really excited. So many of you guys in our house. This is wonderful House of Activism, which has seen so many great campaigns through and through. And so I want to tell you a little bit briefly about the background of our organization. But as an executive director that works for a board, I would be remiss not to acknowledge one of our board members present. So, Schaefer Garland, who is our chairman, who is our chairman. I'm really excited that you think there's a local interest in the campaigns that are run from a personal level, which is awesome. Again, my name is Trace Watson. I'm the executive director of Canvas for a Cause. A lot of you are very familiar to me, so I apologize for being redundant, but a little bit about the background of our organization. Canvas for a Cause, we're a group that exists essentially to educate the electorate. We work on human rights issues. We go to the community and have face-to-face conversations with voters. We work on voter education and public persuasion projects, where we work on issues ranging from the fight for marriage equality, which is indeed, as you might notice from our walls here, one of the largest projects we work on, where we literally go door-to-door and knock on doors and say, what's up, these for Prop 8, and how can I help you change your mind? So some of our less known projects, our effort to fundraise for our cannabis law reform effort. This particular effort is I think one of the most important that we've undertaken. I identify with this issue as somebody for whom this does not specifically affect. I'm an ally to the cause. I'm a non-smoker. I'm not a patient. But not as an executive director and taking off the hat, but as a human being in front of you, this is something that shakes me to the core. I am deathly afraid of what's going to happen to the landscape of our community 6 months from now and a year from now if this ordinance is allowed to pass. I have many friends who are AIDS patients who rely on this medication to maintain the standard quality of life that many people in this room, many also who do not in this room, take for granted. And every day they struggle just to survive and just to live. Is integral to maintain that quality of life. And so we're really excited as an organization to get behind a local effort, one that is so blanketly obvious to get behind that obviously there are people affected by this. The prospect of asking a cancer patient, an MS patient, an insomnia patient, an AIDS patient to take a bus to a trolley, to a taxi, to a train, to the only available cannabis dispensary in the entire city of San Diego, shakes me to the core and is completely unconscionable. So our organization is committed to going out there and fighting back. We've got one of the largest field projects in the city, something we're very proud of. We have 17 activists which work every single day. Every morning we round up here and we go out there and talk about these issues. And today I was privileged to be in meetings with city council member representatives, and it was wonderful to say, we represent the community. We're here not as Americans for Safe Access, not as so many of the other coalition partners endorse the campaign, but as a community who's concerned for its members. And if you pass this ordinance, not only will they be watching, but it will cost you your city council seat. And that's a promise which I intend to be. We will be there fighting in the trenches every day and every night until the next time you're up for election to make sure that if they're held accountable, hopefully they're held accountable for supporting us and we can throw the weight of support behind them. But if they oppose us, know that they are up against the 14,000 voters we talk to every single month. So I encourage you to listen to something Ben has to say. It is not enough to vote. We don't need your vote. Your vote means nothing tonight. You can vote until the cows come home, and that is not going to influence the way the council votes on this issue. So we need you to stand up, to let your voice be heard, to make a difference. If you can spend the the time, that's the most valuable. Write those letters, spend the time in the office. If you can't, donate so someone else can. So, again, I encourage you to get involved. Obviously, I have a self-interest in this because this is an issue in an organization I support. But I ask you all, each and every one of you as citizens, to step up and make a difference. Because if you don't, I shudder to think of the day you wake up when this ordinance goes into effect and the way that's going to weigh on you for the next 6, 10, 20 years. So with that, I'm going to pass this to my esteemed colleague, Ben Rizal.
We were at the Planning Commission meeting as well. And what we saw there was we saw a Planning Commission, which is fairly reflective of the views of the City Council, to say, you know, it doesn't matter if we bring 70 activists to a Planning Commission meeting, we have great testimony from law enforcement, from clergymen, from attorneys, from collective directors, from patients. That is not persuasive to them. So we wanted to say, well, what is persuasive? And one of the premises that we had moving forward was that the people in San Diego support safe access and want medical cannabis facilities all over the city. And that's something that we all believe. And that's animating a lot of our actions. And we see that for a lot of reasons. We see that because, first of all, they are all over the city right now. So obviously, people want they're prosperous, they're proliferating, and that's a good thing because that's more safe access for patients nearby. The second thing is there's not a huge amount of organized opposition. There's a small, very vocal opposition of prohibitionists that are exercising undue influence on the city government. So what are the whole point of the Stop the Ban campaign is to connect this issue to the people of San Diego, to give the people of San Diego an opportunity to communicate to the City Council what they want and to change the narrative in San Diego about the status of medical cannabis facilities, medical cannabis patients, and to let everyone in San Diego who's in power know that this is something that people of San Diego support. So that's the aim of our effort. To talk about how we do that. Right now, there's very, very small amount of visibility about the impending ban. Nobody knows about it, right? I've read a lot of the news coverage coming out of the Planning Commission, which is pretty meager to begin with, and the way they characterized it was like, yeah, there's an ordinance passed, there's some zoning issues they're trying to work out, there's a grace period for compliance, and some people are really concerned about kids. That's the kind of coverage it's been getting. So nobody knows. We've been out canvassing so far, been out in public talking to people, getting our program kind of built, working out the nuts and the bolts. And we say to people, help stop the ban on medical cannabis. And people say, ban? What ban? We've heard what the city council is doing. And if they say yes, we know they're probably lying to us because literally nobody's heard about this. A lot of people in the room are some of the most knowledgeable people in the city about this issue. And even in a room like this, there's still questions about what, you know, what is it, because it's not been reported on, there's not a lot of visibility. So to get into the meat and the guts of the Stop the Ban campaign, there's three real tiers of what the campaign is and what we're doing to accomplish our goal, which is to connect the people of San Diego to this issue. The first is utilizing Cannabis for a Cause's proven grassroots organizing technique. As Trey talked about, we send out teams of professional activists every day to do public education and to connect people to issues and to help get people involved. We have a ton of expertise, a lot of experience, things we've learned out in the field in the hours and hours and hours and hours and hours we've been out there. So that's the first phase of the campaign. The second is we're doing a robust volunteer project, getting volunteers involved, doing a lot of different things. Canvassing is great. We'll talk more about what volunteers can do in a little bit. The third thing is we're doing a really organized patient outreach through the collective. So we realize that the best way to get involved with patients or get patients involved is to do that through the collective, because that's where they all come. That's where you get a hold of them. Our efforts in the field are really connecting to the general public. The patient outreach is really connecting to the patients and the volunteers. Are helping us support both of those tracks. So the next question is, how are we going to influence the City Council? Right now, if there's no Stop the Ban campaign, this ordinance is a done deal. It's done. These votes are there. It was one of our supporters on the City Council who suggested this ordinance. And we met with his staff and we asked him, why would you suggest this ordinance to support medical cannabis patients? And the answer was basically, look, and I know what's going to pass, and some ordinance is better than no ordinance. And that's from an ally. So the political reality as it stands right now is this ordinance is passing. Something needs to change in the political climate if this ordinance is going to be defeated. And that's what we aim to do. How we mold over a lot of different options for communicating with the city council and for letting them know that constituents want safe access and oppose this ban. Let them know that the city's not full of prohibitionists who worry about the complexion of their neighborhood changing, which is something we heard a couple times at the prohibition at the planning meeting, and who don't think that medical cannabis and patients are dangerous to children. So we mold over a lot of things. Protests, picketing was something we mold over. Phone call campaigns was something we mold over. If we organize big street protests and pickets and organize them successfully, we have 8 city council members looking at everybody else and saying, man, the people in your district are really upset about this. So there's no accountability to their constituents. The phone call campaign is pretty similar. There's no demographic information involved in that phone call specifically necessarily. So these city council people can pawn off this public outpouring on people from somebody else's district. We need them to know that it's people in their district, their constituents, that are upset about this. So that's why we set on a letter writing campaign. A letter is something that has to be processed by the city council. So they have to account for all the letters they receive on an issue. Ideally, they have to read them, but they definitely have to account on them. And to let you guys know, normally the city council people get about 30 to 40 letters a week total. So all the different issues are running that. I've heard before that the number of people address city council about is potholes. So that's what people are really upset about. People writing into the city council people about potholes, I know. So we are going to blast that out. 30 to 40 a week is standard. On a single issue, a dozen letters is notable. 100 letters is really unprecedented. And our aim is to generate between 5,000 and 10,000 letters to the city council on this issue, to let them know, and all of them addressed from constituents. So they know these are people in their district. There's no getting around that. So that the city, we can't guarantee that this is going to sway the city council. We have lots of great information that it will. We're absolutely confident. But at the end of the day, they're individuals. They can say, you know what, I got all the letters to hell with it. I'm going to do what I want to ban. But what we can guarantee is that if they pass this ordinance, that they're going to have to do so over the largest outpouring of public opposition to a single ordinance in the history of the city of San Diego. And that's the goal. Let me finish off kind of laying out the campaign, then we'll open it up and have all the questions that we would like. Alright, so we're doing a letter writing campaign. Now, there's two types of letters that somebody can send in. There is a form letter that has it laid out, what people want, and people can just sign it and address it. Those are all right, but a handwritten letter is the gold standard of constituent communication. One handwritten letter from the information we've gotten from the people in political office and inside the political world in San Diego is that one handwritten letter is about 20 times as impactful as a form letter. So each handwritten letter is 20 times a signed form letter. So it's huge. And as we've been collecting letters, and we've collected probably about 350 so far here last week, when we're collecting them, that really rings true. Those form letters, you've seen one, you've seen them all, right? And having a stack makes a big difference. Those handwritten letters are really something unique. So the best way that we can get people involved, if all they have is 5 to 10 minutes to get involved, is one of those handwritten letters. And I'm actually going to give everybody here an opportunity to write a handwritten letter tonight, and I'll be very disappointed if we don't get quite a few from this meeting tonight. Signed form letters are also a great way to get involved. And now I want to kind of go over what the form letters have, what they contain, basically what we're asking. So, what we are not doing is we're not crafting our own ordinance and submitting it. So we're not writing legislation. What we are doing is putting pressure and letting them know clearly without a doubt that this ordinance is a no-go because it's too restrictive. That's the main messaging of the campaign. The ordinance right now is going to pass if we do nothing. So it's very easy to let them know without any question. We don't want them having any cover to say, man, Because what they all say right now is, man, my constituents, I know you guys are saying this and patience and safe access, but my constituents, this is just really what they want. They're not going to have an option to say that. And they're not going to have an option to say it's because it's going to allow too many zones or too many locations. It's going to be, without question, that the current ordinance is too restrictive. We have specific things on the form letters we're asking. Most of them are pretty closely in line with the Medical Marijuana Task Force recommendations. And they roughly revolve around the following things. One is the zoning. So right now in the current ordinance, it is, correct me if I'm wrong, Eugene, it's industrial zones and commercial zones with no residences, right?
And specifics specify which in the industrial zones, because that's a lot of them in the city and commercial as well, but only certain industrial zones, like industrial light,
to understand, and for then to communicate to the city council. So, that's the real meat of the campaign. Now I'm going to open up to the floor for questions about the campaign. Yes, sir.
One question. Do we actually have a head count of who our friends are on the council?
We do.
Who our polls are, so we don't have to we concentrate on the polls and put our energies in there?
We do. Actually, it's funny to say that. We're concentrating on the friends. Because, remember, it's the friends who are saying this current ordinance is the best we got. The foes are pretty dug in deep, but the foes are in the majority. We need the friends to know that they need to amend this ordinance and approve something that guarantees safe access. We do have that information, and we are, in addition to this grassroots work, we are in constant communication with the offices of these city council people, letting them know that we're keeping the pressure on, we're keeping the fire hot, and we're keeping the people of San Diego connected.
Are acting with bands. She
see if their city council members, you know, talk to our city council members, or just a couple of times where they're like, you know, what's going on here? We've got this going on in this city here, and it's working fine for us. Why is it, you know, why is it that you guys are enacting this ban in San Diego? Can we
That's a great idea. It's not something we thought about. It's a good reason why you should be hanging out around here more often to get those great ideas in the campaign. Eugene, does someone want to add?
I want to ask something about the collective outreach that we've just done in the last couple of weeks. It's been amazing to visit the a little over a few dozen places that we have already reached out to. And every single place that we have, and some of you from those places are here tonight, every single place that we have come to, they're extremely excited. They cannot wait to get this. They tell us that their members are coming in every single day and saying, what can I do? You know, because some of the members are reading that magazine. Some of the members, you know, take a look at the website, take a look at the news about, you know, some things going on and understand that there's a ban and there's, you know, things happening in the community, and they're worried about it. And they're asking, hey, what can we do? So the actual responses that we have seen for the campaign and for our effort has been absolutely unbelievable, especially from the dispensaries. For those folks that are here tonight from the facilities that have supported us so far, thank you so much. We delivered over 100 signed form letters, and I don't know how many handwritten letters today to Kevin Faulkner's office, as well as a whole bunch of them to Todd Gloria's office. So that was, thank you for that effort. And we are absolutely going to continue the outreach to the dispensaries, you know, as much as possible in the next week or two.
Awesome.
Yeah, I
just
have a question. The ban or whatever the law that's in front of the city council, are we
going to
just ban the whole thing, or is there just one or two little things we can tweak?
Ideally, it's mandatory. We want to guarantee to stay back. That's ideal.
By how? I mean, change the number of feet between school and 11
acres. Exactly, yeah. Bring the sensitive use requirement into line with state law. Open up the zoning to allow more zones and to bring down the process use requirement.
Can I address all of that real quick?
Yes.
The three things we're asking for, the three specific things, there's a message. It's not just, you know, make it less restrictive. That is the main goal, but in the form letters you'll find there's three specifics. Number one is include commercial, all commercial. And number two, include all industrial zones back into the allowed zones. That's the first thing we're asking for, is that zoning change that Ben was talking about. Number two, as Ben mentioned, is in compliance with AB 2650, which is the new state law, 600 feet away from schools and only from schools. And number three, the process. Process one instead of process four. So that is what we're focusing on, the three acts, nothing else. That really is, not nothing else, but those are the specific acts that we've developed so far in the message.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, how is what we're proposing different from what has been, and like what was it, you know, before?
That's a great question.
Yes.
You know,
the task force, the medical marijuana task force.
Do you mean what's happening now, or what previous recommendations have been?
What were the previous stipulations from the authority?
None existed. We have not had the actual collective cultivation aspects of it addressed by a local ordinance yet. We've only had the individual cultivation of patients addressed in 2003 with the first task force that was enacted, but the second task force that was enacted provided, which was a city council committee that they set up, specific recommendations. There's something different that we're asking for. Really, they're on the line. Task force recommended a process 2 and 3 for collectives 100 and under membership, process 2, and 100 and above a process 3. Maybe that's what we'll end up settling on with the city. I don't know. But we're asking for a process 1. That's what pharmacies are under. That's what we need to be getting. But and the other thing, difference was, I think, maybe zoning differences. But no, they all, I believe, also asked for all the industrial and commercial zones added back into the list. So it's pretty much in line with those recommendations. And a couple members of the task force actually weighed in on the messaging that we've developed so far.
They're endorsing the campaign.
Yeah, and endorsing the campaign.
Yeah, and that's a great point, too, that Mr. Stacey brought up. The Medical Marijuana Task Force was created by the City Council and appointed by the City Council people. They all appointed a couple people beyond it. Their job was to go out in the community and find out what was reasonable, find out what satisfied patients, members of the community, and they put forth recommendations, and the city council said, wow, that's really interesting. Nah, we're not going to do that. So that's why our view is that now we need to go grassroots, now we need to get mass opposition, because obviously they're setting up task force to go and talk, and then they're just going to ignore it anyway, which is why we're advocating this direct action and direct communication.
I just wanted to tell a little story. There was a guy on the task force. It was Reverend Riggs. And he was originally put on there to stop the to be on the ban. But Reverend Riggs went out and went to collectives and started talking to people. And now he's one of our biggest supporters.
Yeah.
And it just shows that, you know, when people look at the truth of it, they're on our side. So, you know, don't be scared when you go out there and talk to people if you tell them the truth of it, because they will change their mind and they will be on our side. And I talked to them 3 weeks ago. I asked them, if you were contacting 1,000 people from your church, and he said, no. He said, you know, that doesn't make sense to them, because churches are places of compassion. Why in the world would they be, why would a compassion center have to be 1,000 people from them? So, This is somebody they put on there to stop it, and then he changed his mind, and they're still ignoring.
Yeah. All right. So who here, put your hand up if you are a resident of the city of San Diego, if you live in the city limits. Awesome. I'm going to need everyone here who has not yet written a handwritten letter. We're going to take about 5 to 10 minutes, and we're going to have you guys write a handwritten letter. We're going to distribute guides for writing a handwritten letter and paper and pen. So go ahead and keep your hands up, and we'll get some material to you. We're going to do that right now to make sure that we get enough letters.
No.
We're all not
thinking you're all good.
Good.
Hands in the air.
I was at my house with
know, I think that's part of it. They're trying to
hey man, I got it already.
See, that's not my room. Yeah. I can bring this to my bare man.
ASA involved in getting their own television channel. And my shows come on Sunday night at 5 o'clock, and 6 o'clock on Cox Communications Channel 18 in North County and 23 in Southern San Diego. And we also come on Wednesday nights at 11 and Thursdays at 9:30 on the same channel. So I have my business card. It has all the information on it. Please get with me before everybody leaves. And please get involved and help the Community Coalition in our efforts to promote progressive messages. Thank you.
Run this campaign, the city council would know they couldn't do it. So it's really important. All right, so now we're going to break into smaller groups to find out how you guys, individuals, given your time schedule, your unique talent, or sort of what position you hold, how you can get involved. So we're going to break into three different groups. One is going to be collective professionals. If you are here, if you're in that group, go to that corner over there where Rachel is. One is going to be if you just want to volunteer. If you want to come in when you have free time and volunteer, that is essential. We can tell you all about that. And if you guys have time to come to a meeting, you definitely have time to come volunteer. So it's really important. And if you're going to do that, go stand by where Shannon is. And the third group is people who really want to get committed and really want to get involved and want to work with organizers. So those are people who are going to do a little more than volunteers. Those are people who are going to come in and who are going to really get responsibility to count on. The biggest impact from a volunteer base. In any case, if you just want to volunteer, go see Shannon. If you're interested in really being an organizer with the campaign, come over here to this corner and see me. So collective professionals over there, volunteers over there, organizers over here. All right.
Which my roommate took.
Well, it is.
Yeah, well, I was pissed. Because even if Ron Paul got in, he's a politician. He's going to try to get that second term. So he's going to...
He's the dumbest guy. He goes, you know, the president needed
my money.
He
goes,
my executive,
I will
remove
him
from office.
But he can also
get
voted out of office.
I
know. They don't have a hard time with that. Because once the cat comes back.
Yeah, they're not going to put it back. But, I mean, that guy is shit.
Labor part of this is going to be managing the patient outreach budget, because not only do you have to set up 180 appointments to get in there initially, get set up, and then you go around and pick up the letter. So that's going to be a big one. Any time we need to organize like this, we need to come to phone call. That's going to be a big one. Because you need to talk with the labor force even that we have here to do all that outreach, and that's going to be really interesting to our patients to a certain degree. The most important information I need from you guys right now, because you guys have everyone's contact info, is your basic schedule right now. So when we can count on you, I would love to say that I could just choose up a bunch of tasks to set you guys on and let you work from home. Unfortunately, with the amount of things that
Well, we're saying, yeah.
Familiar, the more familiar you are
the easier it's going to be for us to do the other things that get stuck at the same time to have it. I had a medical marijuana collective in Vista, California, and we were open for 10 weeks, and then on September 9th of 2009, we got raided. And that we got raided before 7 places got raided. And 31 people arrested at the time, 2 people went federal, myself and a guy named Joe Nunes. And it was all, the whole investigation was done by the local narcotics task force. But what they did to circumvent state law is they crosswore themselves with federal law. So that way they could ignore the state law. And I spent about 2 weeks in jail before I was finally able to get bailed out. I fought this case for the last year and a half. And January 7th, I was sentenced to 2 years probation instead of life in prison. In Vista, there's no licensing required. There's nothing to do.
Okay.
So I had a collector at my building where I also taught martial arts.
Yeah. No licensing required. What was the ground for?
Well, what happened was is a undercover officer had come into the collector.
I guess actually giving 13 minutes. We're here, and so we don't want to disturb her for longer.
Okay.
Okay. So let's.
What happened was is that an undercover officer with a valid doctor's recommendation and a valid ID joined the collective, had done 3 separate purchases of an 8th of an ounce each, and so that was the basis for the raid on my place. And then when they got in, they found 96 plants that the collective was growing, and they were saying that that was all illegal, even though the guy was the father. Into the collective. Now the judge on my sentencing said 3 times that I was state legal and that I was just caught between state law and federal law.
Obviously we have to get on our interaction here. But I want to follow up with you more and get you on the cable TV show and talk more about this. Is there any message you want to leave with the public just right now?
Well, I say we have to support the effort that we got going right now to stop the ban. You need to write your congressman and your senator and tell them to respect state law and to stop raids on people. And if we don't change at the federal level, we're going to keep having problems.
Well, great. This is Walter Davis with the Citizens Internet Television Network. Thank you for watching. We'll be following up on these stories in the future.
Thank you, sir. You got a great voice for talking.
Yeah. bit of part of two that not wanting to go, you know, towards the board. You want both people to be able to have
I was doing that myself. It was a wider, more often.